Now, it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm joined by my co-host, Greg Rinky, to give our insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. In addition to listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on www.wgy.com. Visit our show's website at www.tullyrinkyshow.com for podcasts and previous shows and to comment on our blog. Tonight's show will focus on the various aspects of family law, starting with the process of getting divorced in New York State. We'll also explore the importance of prenuptial agreements in today's world and exactly what can be included in them. Wrapping things up tonight, we'll take a look at child custody, including the myth that fathers never get full custody and the rules surrounding child support. We're very fortunate to be joined tonight by family and matrimonial law attorney Barbara King. Barbara is the managing partner of the matrimonial and family law division of one of the largest groups in the greater capital region. She's also a member of the Women's Bar Association Board of Directors and the chair of the Schenectady County Bar Association's Pro Bono Committee. Joining us each week are Tyler and Chris, our on-air correspondents. In the producer's booth is Caitlin. If you want to join in on tonight's discussion, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or send us an email at info@tullyrinkyshow.com. If you're in your car, just press *WGY on your cell phone to get in touch with us. All this information could be found on our website, tullyrinkyshow.com. Let's get right into things tonight with the law surrounding divorce in New York State. Couples going through divorce here may have a tougher time than those elsewhere because New York is the only state in the country without a so-called no-fault divorce law. Barb, can you explain to us what exactly the no-fault divorce law is?
Sure. No-fault divorce is where a couple can get divorced from each other without having to prove that anybody did anything wrong. Actually, in New York, you have to prove that your spouse did something wrong in order to divorce them. That's what we call grounds for divorce.
And now grounds, there's a few of them, right? What are the most popular?
Yeah, there are several. The most popular ones are adultery, cruelty, which could be domestic violence or some kind of emotional, psychological cruelty. There's abandonment, leaving your spouse without their consent.
So if I just giddy-upped and left my wife tonight, she could sue me for divorce, and she can get a divorce for that, irrespective of the fact that she was mean to me.
Well, you might have grounds to divorce her for being mean and cruel to you, but you have to be gone for a year in order for her to sue you for divorce.
And if I went to jail for 5 years, is that grounds?
Actually, yes. 3 continuous years in jail or in prison in that case would be grounds for her to sue you for divorce.
But let me ask you this, the bigger question, Barb, is what happens if I just am not in love with my wife anymore and I want to file for divorce? Can I do that in New York?
Not unless you have grounds. That's something that's often referred to as a dead marriage. Many of the courts refer to marriages like that as dead, but that doesn't meet the statutory grounds to divorce her. You still have to have one of those other grounds like adultery or cruelty or abandonment.
And if I don't have these other grounds, then what? What can I do?
Well, if the two of you agree that the marriage is dead, neither one of you really wants to keep putting in the effort or going to counseling, you could sign a separation agreement where the two of you agree you want to divorce and how you're going to handle all your finances and your children's issues.
But what happens if my wife is not willing to sign a separation agreement? I mean, that's, I think, where the real issue comes in New York is if one party is not willing to sign a separation agreement and the marriage is just dead, what can I do?
Well, you're stuck married. First of all, it's a very simple answer. You're stuck married. There are actually clients of mine who go to other states. They cross the Vermont border. I had a case where the husband flew to Alaska to get a divorce. I've had clients go to Pennsylvania, Tennessee. But that's difficult, too, because if there are children in the marriage, actually relocating that far could then impede their custodial rights. It is difficult.
Why would they want to go to a different state? What would be the point of that?
Other states that don't have grounds for divorce, no-fault states. You could go live there long enough to meet their residential requirements and sue for divorce in that state.
See, like I'm married. I was married in Kansas. And in Kansas, quite honestly, you can go fly to Kansas. And because I was married in Kansas, I could be divorced in probably 2 weeks in Kansas. It's a lot simpler.
I have a question getting back to me. My wife has been mean to me since the day after we got married. It's been about 9 years now. Can I get a divorce based off of 9 years of cruelty?
Well, you have to look at the definition of what cruelty is. The court has to find that it is unsafe or improper for you to continue living with your wife. So, listen, just about any of the best marriages that you look at, there's some degree of fighting and anger. That's natural. It has to actually reach a level where either there's domestic violence that makes it unsafe, or there's cruelty such that you're psychologically impacted. You're in counseling. You've had a great weight loss or weight gain, hair loss, sleeplessness, stomach aches.
My wife could divorce me because I gained a couple of pounds?
No. That's you alleging that the emotional distress.
So if she gained a couple of pounds, I could sue her.
Let's not go there.
The other question I have, and I'm very lucky tonight because my wife can't listen to us because the power's out, so I get to say all these things. But is it true that the longer you're married, the more difficult it is to get a divorce based off of cruelty?
That's an interesting question, and it's a phenomena I've never been able to understand myself. But in longer-term marriages, the courts do require a higher standard of cruelty. It was a case that said that you have to show some greater level of effect on you, which is odd when you look at the fact that there's only a 5-year statute of limitations on cruelty. So if my husband beat me up 10 years ago, I can't complain about that. I can only complain about things he's done in the last 5 years.
But I guess the thinking there is that over time you've kind of gotten maybe used to the cruel and inhumane treatment. I'm not talking about abuse, but I'm talking about maybe yelling or bickering. I mean, older couples all the time, I think we hear bickering going back and forth, and maybe that's the reason for why over time you need to prove a little bit more.
In any event, it still falls back to being able to show that it's unsafe or improper, because in a short-term marriage, one instance of domestic violence may be sufficient, but in a 20-year marriage, one instance of domestic violence may not.
Now, how come in New York we don't have a no-fault?
Well, they've never passed a law, first, because any ground for divorce is statutory. So basically, you have to have a law passed that says that no fault is allowed. There's been much debate over this. There are some groups that are specifically opposed, lobby against.
And it's not lawyers, right?
Actually, it's no, for the most part, and being in different matrimonial organizations that I'm in, I would say 90% of the lawyers I talk to are in favor of no-fault divorce.
Interesting.
And for any of our listeners out there, remember to call us at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones with any comments.
Thanks, T.
I do know that there are some groups that are opposed to ending or to starting a no-fault law in New York, and Barb, what are some of those groups that are opposed to it?
The two big ones that I'm aware of are, and I don't know the formal name, but there are some Catholic group organizations where they have religious beliefs against it, and they have a very loud voice in this. And the National Organization of Women has also been strongly and vocally opposed to no-fault divorce.
I don't understand why the National Organization would be opposed to no-fault divorce.
It does seem a little bit anomalous, but I believe the theory goes to the fact that a lot of women, as they have progressed in the workforce and are now making equal money or as much, and in some instances more money than their husbands, that there may be some financial disadvantage to having a spouse sue you for divorce and then be in a position to obtain support or equal or equitable distribution of assets.
Now, Barb, when we come back from a break, I'd like to talk about why in New York most people don't litigate fault. But right now it's time for a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about no-fault divorces a little bit more, and we'll talk about why every couple should look into prenuptial agreements. To reach us, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. You could also send us an email at info@TullyRinkyShow.com. Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and with me is my co-host, Greg Rinke. Tonight, we're talking about family and matrimonial law. If you're something you want to give us your opinion on, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. It's no question that prenuptial agreements have a pretty bad reputation. But before we go into prenuptial agreements, let's talk about separation agreements. And Barb, what exactly do you have to do to get a separation agreement?
Basically, it's a contract. The husband and wife have to agree. They have to agree what they're going to do with custody of the children, with support, with dividing their assets and their debt.
And I think that's a big point. Is it's just that it's an agreement. I can't tell you how many clients come into my office and say, I want a separation agreement. And you know, the point is they can try and get a separation agreement as long as their spouse is willing to sign off and agree. It's not something that you can just demand and get. It has to be a meeting of the minds, and it has to be an agreement.
Correct.
Barb, isn't that one of the ways to get around the no fault, is to do a separation agreement?
It is, and Greg just made a very good point, because that's where you look to motivation. If I really want a separation agreement and I don't have grounds to sue my husband for divorce in New York, I'm going to be more motivated in perhaps relinquishing more than I might otherwise in order to get his cooperation to sign an agreement. It's like buying a car. If you want it bad enough, you're going to walk out of the dealership with that car, even if the price is a little high.
So what's the difference between a separation agreement and a divorce? I feel like they're the same thing.
Well, a separation agreement is a contract, and after 1 year, if the couple has not reunited the marriage, either one of them can then petition the court for a divorce. And now we don't have to deal with, did somebody cheat on somebody or act cruelly to them or beat them? You're entitled to a divorce. So as Matt accurately said, it's the closest thing to no fault that New York has.
So once you sign a separation agreement, can you start dating other people?
You can. There's actually a clause in most of our agreements that free up the parties to do that. Now there can't be a charge for adultery.
Speaking about adultery, Barb, we were talking during the break. One of the things that I'm amazed at under New York State law is that I could get on the witness stand and say I had an affair, and that's not good enough for divorce in New York State.
It is a very odd statement. It's true, but there is a history to it. Without getting into the history, if your wife thinks you're having an affair and sues you for adultery, she has to have some corroborating evidence beyond you getting on the witness stand and actually admitting you had that affair.
And that's very similar, actually, to criminal law, because in criminal law, an accused can't be convicted on his own statement by himself. You need to have corroborating evidence.
And the other thing about adultery, Barb, is if my wife takes me back after I had that affair, I'm good to go.
If she does have relations, sexual relations with you, right, after she knows of the adulterous conduct, that is a defense to her suing for you for adultery. You could use it as a defense and say she condoned or forgave the act.
And a lot of our listeners didn't realize that. They can get into an adultery, they go back, you know, even for a week, even for a night, and that's good enough to overcome the adultery.
Yes.
Let's go to Joe from Schenectady. Joe, how you doing tonight?
Oh, yeah, hi, how you doing?
Good, you got power?
I want to ask a question.
Sure, fire away.
Okay, I am currently not with my wife. We don't have a legal separation. I'm living in one spot. She's living in another. She didn't want me to return to the home.
Are you both in New York?
Yes.
Okay.
Our relationship was rocky. I'm going to try to keep it as short as possible, but we sort of had a rocky relationship from the very beginning. Their kids involved.
Your kids
together.
Or...
Two together, one on her own.
Okay.
And as it stands now, I'm living in one place. She's living in another place. We're not together. She talks about wanting a divorce. She never did anything about it or anything like that. She's seeing someone else. She's admitted that to me. I knew it on my own. But I'm to the point that, you know, I mean, we've been apart for nearly a year. So
are you paying child support?
No, not at the present, no.
We're going to get into that a little bit later, but if you don't have custody of the kid, you should expect to start losing about, 17% of your pay, Barb?
Depends on the number of children.
Yeah. So you have one child, so...
Two,
I'm sorry. Kiss 25% of your pay, goodbye.
Okay.
So that's number one. But number two, there's the issue here about whether or not you're going to be able to get a separation agreement. Separation agreements are the easiest way to go, in my opinion. And the reason I say that is the attorney's fees are relatively inexpensive. But when you have kids involved, you have a home, you have other assets involved, you're probably going to need a lawyer because you're going to want to protect yourself. I don't know if you have a job. I don't know if you have a retirement plan, do you?
No, I have a job. I don't have a retirement plan at this time.
Okay, because if you start talking about retirement plans, it gets really complicated. But, you know, one of the things that I would throw out there to you is a separation agreement. And, Barb, can you talk to us about – hey, Joe, thanks a lot. We're going to talk about you a little bit more once I hang up on you. But, Barb, can you tell us a little bit about separation and apart, and how long do you have to have the separation agreement on file for. And a misnomer that many of our listeners have is that it has to be 1 year from when it's filed in the county clerk.
Right, right. Joe is probably in the situation a lot of people are in where they're physically separated for more than a year, but they haven't signed a separation agreement. Under the New York law, to get a divorce, you have to have signed an agreement, and then a year after you sign the agreement, either party can petition for a divorce. They don't have to. They can stay married, but that 1 year has to tick by first.
Now, here's a question that I get quite a bit is when you execute, when you come in to sign a separation agreement, if husband and wife are still living in the same house, can they sign a separation agreement and still live together?
Technically, they can, although there should be some game plan in their A for them to be living in separate quarters in the home, and then a game plan for them to get out, or one of them to get out, because it's not uncommon that one party buys the house from the other, and they need time to refinance or to find another place to live. So there's usually a component built in that within X months, one of them will vacate the home.
But a judge won't deny a separation agreement being converted into a divorce based on the fact that they lived in the same house?
Not if the agreement is drawn properly. And that's why, as Matt said, you really do need an attorney to draw these up. There are defenses to agreements, but if the proper clauses are in them, it's doable.
And what happens if you draft up a separation agreement and then you get back together with your spouse?
Again,
what do you have to do?
If it's drawn with the proper clauses in it, you'll be protected. If there's a clause, as we put in all of our agreements, about reconciling the marriage, we require that the parties have to actually sign and have notarized a statement saying they intend to get back together and to nullify the agreement. Short of that, they can move back in together because the law favors marriages working out. And they don't want people to feel penalized for trying to make the marriage work.
Is there any penalty for Joe from Schenectady who isn't paying child support, doesn't have a retirement plan, seems to be surviving with two different households? Is there any benefit for him to push his wife to get a prenuptial or to get a separation agreement or to file for divorce?
I'd really have to look further at his circumstances, but you raise a good point. Oftentimes I tell people that come in to see me, just because you may have grounds to divorce your spouse doesn't mean it's a good idea. Not everybody needs to move forward on that. Sometimes you're worse off. It's much more expensive to live apart than together, and well, everyone realizes that.
And that's the nice thing about the separation agreement is it's kind of a trial period where you can live separate and apart, and if you can try and work on reconciliation, and if it doesn't work, and you can reevaluate after a year.
And it's often easier on children, in the sense that it's happening a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to call in, guys, if you're listening out there and have something to say. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phone.
Barb, can you explain to us what exactly is a prenuptial agreement?
It's an interesting document, and I'm seeing a lot more of them these days. It's a contract that a couple signs before they marry, where they agree, essentially, to what's going to happen to their assets if they divorce. And I know that doesn't sound terribly romantic, but they're on the rise in certain kinds of people, like, in particular, second marriages.
Why do people want to do this? I don't really understand. It seems like they're setting themselves up for failure.
I think that's a good point, Chris. They're not the most romantic things. It raises a lot of issues right from the beginning. But where I'm seeing them isn't so much in young newlyweds, people who are 25 getting married for the first time. I'm seeing them in second marriages where people are coming into the marriage and they already own a home or a business or some significant assets.
Or they've been burnt once before.
Bingo. That's right.
What can be included in a prenuptial agreement?
Pretty much anything that has to do with the division of the party's assets. I can tell you it's somewhat interesting. There's things you can't put in a prenup. You can't decide who's going to have custody of any children. That cannot be usurped. You can't agree that you're going to divorce. You know, we're getting married, but in 3 years we agree to divorce. You can't alter the grounds for divorce. But you can say, look, I'm going to keep my house or my car or my retirement account, and you're going to keep yours. And that way we don't have to go through litigation if we divorce.
Are they enforceable in New York?
Provided they were fair and equitable when they were entered into and at the time they're being enforced, yes, they are enforceable.
Why are they happening? Why is it more common now?
again, I think it's second marriages. As Greg said, people have been burned. And I also see them where there are children. A man and woman are remarrying, and they each have children from prior marriages. Sometimes it's the grown children that are pressuring the parents. You know, dad's remarrying. Oh, what's going to happen? Is he going to leave all of his stuff to his new wife? There's a lot of dynamics in these blended families that can be complicated.
It's a little bit more easier when you have more mature people. I know I was probably 24, 25 when I got married, and I raised a prenuptial agreement, and I got shut down quick. Mm-hmm. But I suspect now that I have more assets, I'm a little bit more mature, my wife's a little bit more mature, you know, not that we're getting divorced or anything along that nature, but if we were to do it, I think it has to do with maturity and knowing what love is and overcoming the trust violations.
Well, yeah. I heard a lot about these other things called postnuptial agreements. Could you go into those? What are those exactly?
Well, the postnuptials are similar to prenuptials, but they're signed after you marry. And they're usually entered into for very different reasons. So a couple's been married, say, 8 years, and then suddenly one of them says, I want to do a postnuptial agreement. They want to agree on how their assets and debts are going to get divided.
Isn't that kind of like saying we are going to get divorced or hinting to that?
And much more than the prenups, the postnups usually only come to the surface when something's gone awry in the marriage.
Maybe, so, for example, if I cheated, Barb?
I have had several clients over the years whose spouses have cheated, and they've come and said, look, we don't really want a divorce. We want the marriage to try and work, but the trust is gone right now. And so we do postnuptial agreements and avoid the fight later.
It's either sign this now or we're going to file for divorce now.
Sometimes that's the threat, and other times it's just the insurance that perhaps the spouse that cheated wants to give the other spouse to entice them to stay in the marriage and work on it.
Wouldn't I be entering into that agreement under duress then? My wife is basically saying either I'm going to take your business or you're going to sign this agreement.
Well, I don't think it would hold up as duress. If she has grounds to divorce you, that's her legal right, and she can choose not to.
And I guess I could walk away.
Exactly.
Do you see it most commonly with adulterous relationships?
I've seen, I think, about four of them in the 20 years I've been practicing, so they're not that common, but the four I've seen have been over the last 6 years, and they have been where one spouse is, so to speak, stepped out on the other.
And postnuptials are completely enforceable?
Again, if they're fair and equitable, when they're entered into and when they're enforced, yes.
And everything can be included in them? You can talk about the divorce, or is it like a prenup where you can't talk about that?
You can't agree to divorce or change the grounds for divorce. You're basically dividing your assets between each other.
All right. We'd love to know what you think about the subject. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or send us an email at info@tullyrinkyshow.com. We'll be back from the news and weather in about 3 minutes, and we'll be talking more about child custody and child support.